Welcome to episode 26 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British soap institution, Coronation Street. I'm Gemma.
And I'm Michael.
And this week we'll be discussing the episodes broadcast in the UK between the 21st and the 25th of January 2013.
Yeah. It's been a big week for Coronation Street this week.
Well, there was a wedding, or not.
Yeah, I was thinking more of the Rob and Tracy possible pairing.
That's that was
my storyline of the week.
Well, we'll talk about that first.
No. Well, actually, in real life, it's been pretty big as well because of they've won some awards at the National Television Awards. So, hooray for Corrie.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and thank you, I'm sure, to any listeners that voted as well.
Yep, you can public vote, so it means all that much more.
Yeah, it was good to see them beating out EastEnders for once. Ha ha. It's also trending pretty well on Twitter, apparently. My colleague at work came and told me that her daughter was shocked that Coronation Street was on Twitter, and she said, "What do people? Do lots of people watch Coronation Street or something?"
Not anymore.
Yes, it's this 13-year-old girl that's surprised that people actually talked about Coronation Street.
13-year-olds are surprised that anyone exists that's over the age of 13, hasn't died yet. Let's face it.
Right, let's get talking about Rob and Tracy and all the other storylines, of course, on Street Talk.
So on Street Talk this week, nothing really happens. Should we just go straight to character profile?
Shut up. I think they've had enough of us pretending. There was a wedding, Tyrone and Kirsty.
There wasn't.
Oh, well.
There was a ceremony. That was the first storyline.
Yeah, the wedding that never was, the climax, or is it, to the domestic abuse storyline.
I don't think so. And then there was plenty of flirting from Gail and Lewis.
Faye's dad onto the...
Is he just an evil internet stalker?
I didn't even think about that.
What he's supposed to
I don't
be.
Think so.
No. There's lesbian love in the air with Sophie and Jenna.
And finally, as we alluded to earlier, Rob and Tracy, the next big couple.
Yeah. What can we call them?
Racy.
Racy.
Hopefully they won't be around long
Hopefully
enough.
Hopefully they won't have a name.
Yeah. So let's get going. Tyrone and Kirsty. It was obviously the big day on Monday. The whole storyline has
been around this day.
Yeah,
this Monday wedding for some reason.
It's been quite a few months since the whole idea of this fake wedding, the sham wedding, we actually go through. So I think everyone's been looking forward to it, and ITV have been picking it up. So Monday it finally arrived, and Kirsty obviously by this point knew. And she just discovered that Tyrone and Fizz were having a secret liaison, so she was looking pretty miserable.
Yeah, she was. She ran outside and she found his phone again, didn't she? Because although he's left the house, he hasn't taken his phone with him. Does that strike you as odd?
Well,
I know he's with Fizz.
I think
Fizz.
He thinks it's safe because he's with Fizz and he doesn't know that she knows about it, so.
I wouldn't have left it.
Wouldn't you?
Not if I was having an affair.
Well, meanwhile, Tyrone's also getting a bit tetchy. Poor Kirk, being a really good best man.
He's just rubbing it in at this point, though, isn't he? He says, "Your wedding is the best day of my life. It's the greatest honour bestowed upon me."
Yeah,
to be his best man.
Kirk hasn't been anyone else's best man, has he?
How would I know?
He's been. I don't know whether he's been godparent to anyone. I don't know, to Liam or something, maybe. But it's obviously a really. Important duty for Kirk.
He was so excited about it, and I feel kind of sorry for him because Tyrone has not even let him enjoy it properly.
No.
And forever now, he's going to be like the first time he was a best man. If he ever is one again, he's going to remember. He'll probably refuse it next time it's offered on the fact that he's cursed.
Oh.
No, Kirk.
Well, also the hens come over to go and see Kirsty again.
Yeah, Maria seems to be the hairstylist of the brides of the
of course
of the street. Nobody asked Audrey to do it. I'd be offended if I was
Maria
there.
Always does it. Maria does the hair. Hayley does the dress half the time.
Yeah, and Mary does the doomed catering.
Yeah, well, not this time though. It was Mandy doing the catering, wasn't
that's
it?
True.
She
that's
did do
true.
A pretty good job. I like.
Which like Mandy does. Mandy's the one that caters for weddings that don't happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves. So Tyrone and Fizz are around Hina's flat.
Well, this is after Kirsty was looking very nervous, and they were telling her, oh, don't worry, you're marrying a good man. Tyrone's the best man there is. Cut to Tyrone and Fizz having a little embrace over at Tina's love nest.
Yeah, they're trying to convince him he's doing the right thing.
Yeah, but he's not proud of what he's doing. He just wants to kind of get it over with.
All along he's been saying the same thing.
Yeah, he wants to have a family. He'd like to get married, but he's not happy. He has been feeling guilty and a bit sorry for Kirsty.
Yeah, because she's been so happy and nice to him.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, if Fizz hadn't come along, he probably would have ended up staying with her.
I agree, just for the
best shot of a happy family.
Yeah, so Fizz tells Tyrone she's going to come to the wedding, and Tyrone can say his vows to her. And they're going to stay in a hotel that's got a cot for Ruby.
Yeah, so they go over to the Rovers, Tyrone and Kirk and that lot, and everyone's congratulating him, of course.
Buying him drinks.
The usual one. It's a bit like when they found out that Tina was pregnant and everyone was buying Tommy drinks, and he was like, oh.
Yeah, don't rub it in.
Yeah.
And then we see Kirsty in her dress for the first time, and it seems like she's picked up the bridesmaid dress instead of the wedding dress.
I thought it looked quite nice. Dress. I mean, I prefer white on a bride, but I did like this dress. I think it kind of suited her dark side.
I thought it was an unusual choice, and they didn't comment on it either.
No, they didn't. That's right. I think I read. I don't know whether this was official or whether it was fans just speculating, but the purple was kind of supposed to reflect the bruises that she had bestowed on Ty. And also, I think Natalie Gamedia said she wanted a black dress, but they weren't having any of that. That would look awesome.
I think a white dress would have been better as ironic juxtapositioning.
Yeah, not so innocent.
I think so.
It would.
Imagine if she had been wearing some kind of feathery, lacy thing.
Yeah.
And then she'd been shrieking. Anyway, I didn't like it.
You wouldn't have worn it.
No, they go on about how awesome Tyrone is, and Kirsty says, it'll be a day nobody forgets.
Yeah, because she's plotting away what she's going to do. So, but this followed our predictions from last week. I think I thought that the ceremony would go ahead.
I can't remember what I said.
You had some crazy theory about her dropping Fizz's phone in the canal or something.
Don't say crazy theory. I think they should hire me. Is anyone listening from Coronation Street, hire me? Because, frankly, let me just get this off my chest. I think I could have written a better episode than this one.
Well, you are a writer. It's your profession.
Not a script writer, but I can learn.
Yeah, Gemma wasn't impressed with the wedding. I thought it was good. But
what wedding?
Well, let's see.
We keep interrupting ourselves.
I know, we're actually having a conversation this week and not just monotonously reading out our notes.
No. So people arrive to the church, and then Kirsty is sitting in the car with Julie and Brian, and she starts freaking out. Julie gives her rescue remedy, which, in case you wondered what she was dropping on her tongue.
I didn't even see that. I must have been looking down.
She put a few drops of thing on her tongue, and that's rescue remedy.
I have that sometimes.
I have that when I go on a plane.
Yeah. I think it's just a placebo.
No, you can't believe that, because then it won't work. It's actually medicine. So they're trying to convince her it's okay, and Kirsty says she's having second thoughts.
Yeah, Julie was being
Julie's lovely.
Yeah, Kirk was a brilliant best man. Julie was doing an excellent job of maid of honour, and
the bride and the groom just didn't have their hearts in the right place, did they? Maybe.
Yeah. And Brian was a good driver as well.
What a great no, wasn't he? Kept complaining about petrol.
Yeah, that was funny.
So, eventually, she walks into the church.
Yes, this is after Fizz has been in as well, hasn't it? Almost knocking out the vicar by bumbling through the door, and everyone's like, mutter, 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 what's Fizz doing here?
Rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb.
Yeah.
So, Kirsty keeps looking at Tyrone, and he says his vows, I think, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
They've obviously got quite far into the ceremony by this point.
Yeah, he's looking nervous, but Kirsty is absolutely ricking it, isn't she? She's sort of panicking. You can tell that she needed another drop of that rescue remedy.
She should have just downed it.
She started crying, and the vicar's like, are you okay? And then she does the vows. Well, no, she goes to do the vows and says no.
I won't marry him.
Yeah, Shelley Unwin style.
She pulls out the phone and says the wedding is a fraud.
Yeah.
And she starts going on about, oh, this is the phone of the person you're having an affair with, blah, 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 blah.
Who's going to be?
Then she phones it, then Fizz's phone, ring, ring.
Yeah, ring. That was a good cliffhanger, I like that.
So, everyone's shocked apart from Michelle. He says she knew it was coming all along. She looks very smug about this.
Yeah, but what interested me was that Ty is so strongly trying to deny it. He's still like saying, no, it's not true, it's all lies.
He's going, let's carry on. No, no, no.
Yeah.
Shh. The priest is like, oh, I don't think I can continue. And then Kirsty says, I know exactly what you want, and you're never going to get it!
Yeah, but...
referring to Ruby.
Referring to Ruby, because she says that he can have Fizz.
Yep.
Says you're welcome to him.
Her.
Oh. He's welcome to her, she's welcome to him. And then she storms off and says, you'll never see me or Ruby again.
Yeah.
Which is the ultimate Curry ultimatum, because it was even in the same episode that they saw her. But never mind, she throws the bouquet at Fizz.
Oh, yeah, she
symbolic.
Goes, ah! Julie's saying, out. Oh, you should have told me. She storms out. And then
Brian drives off.
Well, Kirsty says, I've got no idea what to do, where to go, where I'm going to live. She's genuinely in pieces now at this point because her life is...
Yeah, we've seen the vulnerable side of Kirsty again, even though she put together this elaborate plot to humiliate Ty at the altar. Now that that's out of the way, I don't think she thought any further than that.
But she is terrified.
Yeah.
But I don't know how upset she is.
Well, I think what do you think she's scared of? The fact that it could all come to light about what's happened? But what she's been doing?
I don't think so. I think she's just scared about what she done.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She doesn't
want... She's a hard one to work out,
can't she? Yeah, she's good. Good actress.
Yeah.
Mysterious.
So Tyrion goes back to the house to look for Kirsty, but she's not there. He's trailing behind Kirk and Kev.
Kirk's getting a bit too much for Ty, and he kind of sends him on his way,
well,
doesn't
Kirk says the wedding was a disaster, and Tyrion's like, yes, go away.
Yeah.
And Kev asks him why he was going to go through with it if he was having an affair all along.
There's a bit of a scene in the Rovers that we can come back to, but Ty's kind of confessing up to Kevin. Well, he tells him everything, and Kevin believed him, didn't he?
Yes.
It was quite interesting to see these former friends, then enemies, then friends, kind of bonding over this again.
Really, Tyrone, although he needs all the friends he can get at this point, should never forgive Kev.
No, absolutely.
Anyway, Chesney is asking Fizz what the hell's happened, and she's saying they had no choice. She might as well not have said anything for all the good that it does, because nobody listens to a word that her or Tyrone says from this point onwards.
No, or Chesney
nobody
certainly...
Nobody will listen to anything they say.
Well, Kev's he's the only one. I was really surprised that Chesney was so unsupportive.
Well, Chesney has had another... I think they're turning all of the characters into Stepford Wives and just replacing their brains with robots or something, and they just feed a script in and then spits out some kind of strange
personality. Well, that's what you think Jenna's like, don't you? You said earlier she was a bit robotic today.
Well...
The three witches, Deirdre, Sally and Eileen, are all there at the Rovers, aren't they? And they're kind of starting to piece things together and have a gossip, and they're definitely on Kirsty's side.
Well, Deirdre's the one that suggests that Tyrone beat Kirsty up, and Sally and Eileen start believing her. But before that, Chesney doesn't listen to Fizz telling him that Kirsty is abusing Tyrone and that she didn't put the name on the birth certificate. Michelle's saying to Peter and Kyle she knew all along since the finger got stitched that something was going on between them two.
Yes.
Kirk's bemoaning the fact that he was picked as the best man because he's stupid and he would never have worked out that Tyrone didn't want to go ahead with it. And Kevin, this is when Kevin is told by Tyrone about his plan to get Ruby back. And Kevin's first reaction is to laugh and say Tyrone should have stood up to her.
Yeah.
And Tyrone's like, it doesn't work like that in real life.
Yeah, and he's like saying to Kev, you're the last person to be giving me advice on affairs.
Yeah, exactly. He's and Kevin says you should go to the police, but Tyrone says, too late for that, and he kicks him out. So at this point, Kirsty wants to go home.
Yeah, she's like, well, she doesn't know where else to go. And she must have been thinking, what can I do now? So she's kind of got over the emotion of the ceremony, and now she thinks, well, how am I going to get out of this? So she goes home and tells Tyrone that she's not done with him yet. Not by a long chalk.
Yeah.
Which is the first time I've heard that phrase in a while.
They use whiteboards these days, Kirsty.
Up north they still do.
So, the next episode, she's telling him everything was fine and he ruined everything.
Yeah,
basically.
So this seems to be a continuation of the same scene, doesn't it? Just 2 days later, it didn't seem like, yeah.
Yeah, it's still Monday on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And she's saying, look, I haven't laid a finger on you in a month because I was happy and you just want to marry me to get Ruby, but I'm not stupid. I figured it out. And
you
had me fooled.
Yeah.
And he's saying, sorry, sorry, sorry.
Yeah, so he thinks he's to blame for everything that's gone wrong. And then we cut to Fizz, who's also beside herself, sort of crying on the sofa.
Well, she's on the sofa going, oh, poor Tyrone will never see Ruby again. I have no thought for myself, of course. I'm just thinking of Tyrone and Ruby. And Chesa says, it's all his fault, anyway. But Fizz blames herself for making things worse. Then we cut back to Tyrone and Kirsty, and Tyrone saying, I hated Lion, I had no choice. Stop trying to make me feel guilty. And she says, oh, but it's all Fizz's fault. And she starts talking about the photos and saying, oh, these photos would come in handy when you're using them for the custody battle. And then she starts deleting
them. She's got all the jargon that a police woman.
Oh, yeah, she's going, delete.
Now, it's already ridiculous that Fizz deleted the photos off her own phone, and there's no real reason for that. They do bring it up with a poor excuse. But Kirsty doesn't even seem to think that... she doesn't say, or does Fizz have the photos? Because I would have assumed that she would have at some point tried to get Fizz's phone off her.
Okay, let's just say that they were saved in an image folder and she thought that they were taken on Tyrone's phone.
Yeah, I guess so. That's true. That is true, actually.
It's plausible. Yeah. But not very good detective work, Kirsty. That's why you never got higher in the ranks.
Yeah.
So she deletes all the photos and says, we were doing fine until Fizz came along. It's all her fault. Tyrone's defending her. Kirsty says she brainwashed you. Then he says, actually, no, I overheard you talking to Fizz about sewing up her hand.
Yeah, suddenly the ball's in his court. He stands up to her at last.
And he said, I only went around there to defend you. I wasn't around there because I was having an affair. This is something you've made up. Now, that was the point that I fell out of love with you.
Yeah.
And this really hits Kirsty.
Yeah, she's suddenly completely powerless.
She says, it's not true, but she's glad she sewed up Fizz's hand, but she wishes she could have crippled her for life. And then she starts pushing Tyrone around, and he says, go on then.
Yeah, go on, hit me. Show him what you like.
I'm not scared of you anymore.
Yeah.
Because I love Fizz. And then Kirsty said, I love you, Tyrone. And Tyrone says, I'm sure you do, in your own weird way. But you beat the love out of me, bit by bit.
Oh, that's sad.
So, meanwhile, sad little Fizz goes into the pub and asks...
Yeah, everyone's against her, all blaming her.
Again, this is like when she was in trouble before.
Yeah, but there's been... Yeah, poor old Fizz. They do. I mean, Fizz is lovely, but it doesn't take much for everyone to turn against her.
It seems like people are really into ganging up on each other in the programme at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's ganging up on Tina. Everyone's ganging up on Tommy. When they thought he did the gas thing.
For the writers to make us feel sorry for a character, we've got to have everyone ganging up against them.
It seems like they can't think of any other way of doing it.
They need to
get out of the rut, really, because it just irritates me.
Mm.
And it just makes everyone else's personalities go a bit strange.
Well, definitely this week, when people started turning against Tyrone, Eileen and Julie.
Yes. Well, I can understand Julie, because she gets carried away at the moment, doesn't she?
Oh, yes.
She's loving it, really. She would never admit it to herself, though.
So, back at Tyrone's house.
Fizz goes into the pub and asks Kevin whether Tyrone is still mad at her. And Tina gets her a brandy.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote that down because it's important.
That's very important.
Kirsty tells Tyrone about the time that her dad broke her collarbone, but her mum wouldn't tell the doctors it was him, and starts spinning a sort of sob story about how she can't trust anybody because they always let you down in the end, kind of implying that Tyrone's like her mum in that she put all of her faith in him and he's gone behind her back.
Yeah, and it seemed at this point that they were, I mean, obviously not making up or anything, but there was almost a stalemate situation.
It was kind of like the aftermath was just two people talking about a failed relationship that they had no emotional investment in anymore.
And it could have stayed like that until Tyrone says, well, I'll move out, it's okay, which is silly, but I'm going to take Ruby. And she's like, no.
Yeah, you're not taking her.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm going to, because you'll hit her. Not tomorrow, maybe, but eventually you will.
I think he's got a totally valid point. We've said this in the past, that there was always the possibility that this could turn into a sort of a child abuse storyline with her beating.
Oh, she did have those moments, didn't she, before with Ruby?
What was it?
There have been moments, and she's been really upset with Ruby.
Around Ruby. Oh, yeah,
she
hasn't
done anything to the baby, but she got... Do you remember?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, so he that I don't blame him for not trusting her with her. they go upstairs, don't they? Then, and in the meantime, Fizz's finds out that Kirsty's gone back home, so she and Tina and Tommy,
everyone's outside,
mass exodus in the Rovers.
They all run outside. So you've got Sean, Paul, Eileen, Tina, Fizz, and Tommy all the other side of the door. While upstairs, you've got
upstairs scene.
You've got Kirsty and Tyrone arguing over Ruby outside of her bedroom, and then Kirsty goes to lunge at Tyrone, and he ducks like some kind of action man, and she just tips down the stairs.
Now, what did you think of the fall?
We watched it 3 times.
We did. Well, first, we wanted to see how realistic the stunt double looked, because I mean, the first time I was like, "Is that a stunt double?" Then we looked again. I mean, it obviously was.
Well, you couldn't see the face. Yeah, it was.
You could see the
face. It was a stunt. Watched it 3 times.
I'm fooled. I think Coronation Street is real sometimes, but the main question is, how does it compare to Gail's fall down the stairs?
You say it was better. I say Gail's was better.
Gail left a big black mark on the wall, which I quite like, and Kirsty didn't. But Kirsty's was, I think, a more kind of violent tumble.
No.
We should have more people falling down the stairs in Coronation Street.
Right, everyone, you can vote on Facebook. Who fell better, Kirsty or Gail?
Yeah, now that is a good question.
Yeah, and then they can get the award for best.
I don't know.
It should be the Gail Award for best
fall down the stairs.
So Gail should win it. So this is when they open the door from the other side.
Paul bursts in, doesn't he?
And everybody sees poor, unconscious Kirsty bleeding sweetly from her nose in her wedding gown.
Yeah,
with Tyrone standing at the top of the stairs.
She found it was an accident.
And Eileen's like,
yeah, right.
Whatever.
That was from that moment. Eileen was just absolutely convinced by Kirsty's story. And despite everything that she knows about Tyrone and has done for the past however many years.
I was saying this the whole time. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Because she's heard them arguing, but that doesn't mean... I never have listened to somebody arguing in my life and assumed I knew who was in the right and who was in the wrong.
But when we've seen them two listening or hearing their arguments in the past, you can hear the words fairly clearly. So surely you would have thought that they would have been able to hear at some point during all these many arguments.
I know.
What was going on?
Stop hitting me.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Stop hitting me, Kirsty.
Shut up, Tyrone. I'll hit you how I want.
Yeah.
Like, well, obviously, Eileen is slightly deaf.
Yeah.
Julie comes running out of the pub, sees the ambulance. Eileen's making wisecracks and horrible remarks about the fact that she knows that it was all Tyrone's fault. Fizz stays with Tyrone and Julie goes in the ambulance with Kirsty.
Yeah.
And then Tyrone starts blaming himself that she fell down the stairs, but Fizz says, you know, it wasn't your fault.
Yeah.
So Tina goes back in the pub and tells everybody what happened. And Sally and Stella are really shocked. And Sally tells Kev that everyone's told her that Tyrone's been violent to Kirsty. And Kevin says that's wrong and he's the one that's been abused. And Sally says that's mad. Don't believe a word he says. Maybe he can't trust women anymore because of everything that's happened. And then Kev goes, obviously she's referring to the fact that Kev and Molly had an affair.
Yeah,
they broke Tyrone's heart.
A few of the characters seem to blame what happened with Molly, or say that's the excuse for Tyrone's behaviour. And I mean, that was 2 years ago. And I don't know
how many people become abusive because their wife had an affair and died in a tram crash.
Yeah, I mean, that happens all the time, surely. And
well, it's quite a common occurrence, isn't it?
In Soapland.
So
Kirsty wakes up at the hospital then.
And Julie says, you've got some broken ribs.
Mm.
And then immediately Kirsty starts asking for Tyrone, but then she changes the record pretty quickly and tells Julie that Tyrone had pushed her down the stairs and phoned the police immediately.
Yeah, and then she starts this pack of lies about the fact that Tyrone's been beating her up all this time. We hit her with a ladle, gave her a slap.
I wasn't paying enough attention to this to work out whether she was recounting exactly what had already happened, but with her in the victim's role.
I don't think so. I think if they wanted to do that, she would have said, he hit me with a Hoover.
Yeah,
because everyone remembers the Hoover.
Now, I think she's going to get herself in trouble by forgetting what she said.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, because if she had just said exactly what had happened, but the other way around, she'd be able to remember quite easily.
Yeah.
But starting coming out with all this stuff about a ladle and...
Because she just seemed to say it spontaneously. She didn't seem to have been plotting what she was saying, did she?
Yeah, well, when the police come, she says, he pushed me. It wasn't the first time. It's going on for months. He hit me in the face with a ladle. I had to hide in the house. I didn't keep records because I loved him and he promised he'd changed. She wants Ruby because she's worried that Tyrone's going to hit her. And then Julie says, I'll look after her. But Kirsty's having none of it. She wants her to be taken into temporary foster home because she's scared that Tyrone will snatch her.
Yeah.
And then she tells the police, I used to be a copper, so I know the system. I don't want to tell you how to do your job, though. And the policeman sits down on the bed and sort of gives her this beatific smile, as if to say, oh.
Yeah, fabulous. So back in the Rovers, everyone's discussing who's to blame. And so it's basically Tina, Tommy and everyone versus Eileen and Sean. And kind of Tyrone gets a bit fed up of it and goes home. Fizz is reassuring them that things will be okay. And Tyrone's actually feeling positive. He's happy that everything's out in the open, and he says, oh, now nothing's going to come between me and Ruby.
Well, he does tell Fizz that the photos have gone, but she says they'll have hospital records of the time that he hurt his arm.
Yeah, and that's not been mentioned since, has it? So maybe that will come back. But
Kirsty can get around that very easily by saying he hurt his arm when he hit me.
Well, and then the police come round take Ruby away just at the very moment he says that.
Yeah, I've written down, Tyrone says he won't let anyone take Ruby off him, and the police appear to take Ruby off him.
Yeah. And then he gets arrested as well and is kind of bundled into the back of this giant police van with everybody watching, of course.
Harriet Lithgow takes Ruby and puts her into care.
Mm.
And Eileen says, I told you so. Fizz cries her heart out and Tyrone's crying in the police car and it's all just dreadful.
Yeah, which leads us on to tonight's episode.
So, yeah, all of that happened in one day.
What a drama day.
Three episodes. drama day?
Yeah.
Every day's a drama day on Coronation Street.
I think that's depends on who the characters are.
So, on Friday's episode, Tyrone is sad. He's in his little cell.
Banging on his door, getting the little flap open. It's the usual kind of...
Look through the flap.
Yeah, I'm in a cell scene.
Still sometimes boggles my mind that they can just stick you in a cell because someone said you did something. Doesn't it blow your mind sometimes to think that they could just chuck... If I went, yeah, Michael's really mean, and you tell him they're going to get you to go in prison, you'd have to sit there and wait. Do they give you magazines?
I don't think so.
I don't know about pregnancy and I don't know about being in a cell. So if anyone in here is listening to us as a crim...
I don't think they give me magazines, but I'm sure they'd let me take my 3DS in with me there.
Yeah, but you could get street passes, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Fizz is trying to phone up the police station, and she's like, oh, I'm not a family member, but I'm a good friend. But she can't learn anything, obviously.
No, why would they tell her anything?
No.
So Chesney and Katie are being absolute bumholes and accusing Tyrone of pushing Katie downstairs, criticise him for going through with the wedding, and telling Fizz that she's crap at picking men, basically.
Yeah.
Katie's just being a horrible cow. I'm sure Katie in the past would have gone, it's none of my business, and kept her nose out of it.
She would, because Katie has no personality.
No, but in the past, I'm sure she's been like, it's none of my business.
Yeah.
She has, I'm sure there's been things where she's like, just leave it alone, it's nothing to do with us.
Mm.
So, she's a cow, and... So is Julie.
Do you like Julie? Well,
no, I do like Julie, and she's going to feel absolutely dreadful when obviously, let's face it, Kirsty's going to get found out, and Julie's going to be beside herself, probably, and spend a long time trying to make it up to Fizz, and crawl into her, and Fizz is going to get irritated. That's my prediction.
Well, that's what Julie does. She gets involved, really personally involved. Yeah, with anyone that's upset, Julie kind of is...
She's like the mother hen, isn't she?
She imagines that it's herself, and she's like, oh, dear.
So she says, Julie says to Fizz, Kirsty is poor dear, and that Fizz is going to be next if she stays with Tyrone, because he's horrible.
Yeah. And so that later on we see Julie in the hospital visiting Kirsty again, and she's like feeling guilty for not noticing anything, and
she takes half a day off so she can spend time with Kirsty in the hospital because she blames herself for not noticing. But blimey, God, how awkward would that be? Sitting in hospital bed with some random woman. They don't really know each other that well, do they?
No, not really.
It's awkward enough making small talk for half an hour. Can you imagine spending half a day?
Yeah, with Julie, I'd want
I can
to
only
her,
assume but... she took the bus, because if she's staying in the car park, it's going to cost her about 20 quid.
So the policeman comes and wants to find out what's happening, and she describes Tyrone as being a real Jekyll and Hyde type.
Yes. since his wife died in a tram accident.
Yeah, there comes that tram crash again. And he does, the police officer does a dash report on her. Well, a dash report is a domestic abuse, stalking and harassment report. 27 questions. If you get 14 ticks, then you are
to be worried
about. If you get 14
correct, then you get to have your husband put in jail.
Yeah.
Woo!
But you need to stop researching that, please, because you're going to try and get me put in jail, aren't you?
No, I wouldn't. Oh, apparently it's also stands for Detailed Assessment of Speed Handwriting.
That's hilarious. They're testing how fast her handwriting is.
Maybe, wait a minute, maybe the Coronation Street lied to us and it's not even real. Because it's not coming up when I search it on Google.
My handwriting.
Oh, here we go.
My handwriting's really slow since I've been typing for the most of the past 10 years.
Dash risk checklist.
We're not going to read all 27 things, are we? Give us a couple of tasters.
Yeah, I'm gonna tell you if I can find. Right, okay. You pretend to be Kirsty.
Okay.
Has the current incident resulted in injury?
Yes, I fell down the stairs. He pushed me.
Are you very frightened?
I'm terrified.
What are you frightened of? Is it further injury or violence?
I'm just worried that he'll hit me. And Ruby.
Oh my goodness. Do you feel isolated from family and friends?
I've got no family or friends. Sorry, Julie, but I hardly know you.
Are you feeling depressed or having suicidal thoughts?
Don't talk to me.
No, I don't think she'd say that. Have you separated or tried to separate from name of abuser within the past year?
No, I tried to marry him. Oh, no, song, wrong answer.
Oh, is there conflict over child contact?
Oh, yeah.
Do they constantly text, call, follow or harass you?
Are
you currently pregnant or have you recently had a baby in the past 18 months?
Oh, yeah. How does she only get 17 goodness. Out of 27?
Has he used weapons or objects to hurt you?
A ladle.
Oh.
He spooned me with her.
He hasn't tried to strangle her, though.
No.
Oh dear, this is very dark. So, she scored 17.
Does it say what that says? Anything about?
Huh?
Does it say anything about? Sort of, is it like when you have those questions in the polls and it says if you got this many, then.
No, what it's got here is set questions about your current situation, then questions about your children, and then domestic violence history. And then questions about the abuser, like are they on drugs? Have they threatened to commit suicide? Have they been in trouble with the police?
Okay.
And then you can ask them, do they constantly try to follow, stalk or harass you? And then if they say yes, you have to ask them if they vandalise property, blah, blah, blah. This is for people that are just being stalked, I suppose.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, so I don't know how she scored 17 if some of the questions are about criminal records and committing suicide and strangling you.
Well, you don't know what she would have said. So she's having a dash test anyway, and
you
she
can
just
look
tells
it
a
up
pack of lies.
At www.dash-riskchecklist.co.uk.
Yeah.
To find out if any fictional characters you know are being abused by people that are actually trying to trick them into marriage.
So, I loved Julie's expressions when Kirsty was telling her pack of lies.
She was wrapped, wasn't she?
It was every time it cut to Julie, she seemed to have a different kind of empathetic expression. Sometimes it was like a gasp of horror, and sometimes it was like, oh my gosh, you poor petal. And sometimes
she calls her angel.
Yeah, and then other times she's like there crying her eyes out. It's almost like she's the one that's being abused.
I know that Anthony Cotton got his own chat show, but I think that the fictional character of Julie Carp should have her own, like Jeremy Kyle for sob story shows.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor love. Oh.
So part
of her story that she spins is that she said she walked out when she was 8 months pregnant and that they can check that out because the policeman had to come and get her because tirades.
That did happen.
So she's putting some real stuff in there.
Yeah.
Okay. So then we cut to Fizz and
Tina
together talking with the giant Hope, who is walking about now.
Yeah, now, I'm sure we have, but I don't actually remember seeing Hope since she's been out of a
To be honest, cop. If I had seen Hope and she wasn't just attached to Fizz, I would not have assumed it was Hope because she's blonde.
Oh yeah, she's not a ginger baby.
No.
Oh.
There you go. No comment. No further comment from us on
that. Well, at least she's got something good from John.
So, Deirdre and Arlene are off telling the police about all their little suspicions and fake stories about how they saw this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
And Tyrone is let out of the police cell.
Yeah, and he goes to live with Tina.
No. He's what? In... He's
oh, yeah, sorry, I've skipped ahead.
Yeah, he's being interrogated by the police. He's furious because he's been in the cell for a day and a night, and they tell him they need to talk to him about Kirsty's allegations.
Yeah, and his short fuse there is not doing him any favours.
Oh, it always happens, doesn't it? When they get arrested for anything, they just react in the most ridiculous way that you possibly could.
Yeah. The detective is sort of very suspicious of him and being sarcastic. He's sort of already made his judgment on Tyrone, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's be honest. You probably would be horrible.
There's no reason at this point for them to sort of...
Must be really hard to be a cover.
Of lying.
I wouldn't like to do it. I'd get paranoid. Probably.
I believe everybody. I'm too gullible.
I don't believe you at all. You're a big liar.
We'd make a good cop team. Gullible top suspicious cop.
Yeah. It's funny that they don't use that in programs more often. Well, they didn't have good cop, bad cop. They had bad cop and sympathetic solicitor.
Yes.
It's always funny how when the solicitors are there, they never seem like they really believe the person. She's like, you don't have to say anything.
Yeah.
So he says Kirsty's lying, she's the one that abused me, and the policeman says, in that case, why did you ask Kirsty to marry you then, and if you're having an affair with Fizz, and all your neighbours are saying that you're abusive, no one's backing you up, and that's the end of that, really, isn't it?
I was surprised that Tyrone said he wished he'd never met Kirsty, because that would imply that he wished he'd never had Ruby. Wow. I thought that was an interesting choice of words. I think maybe he doesn't really mean that.
No. So, it turns out that he's allowed out, and Tina tells Fizz that Tyrone can stay at her house because he can't stay in Fizz's house because it's too close.
Yeah.
So,
we said, well, why doesn't Tina move in with Chesney and Katie for a bit, and then Fizz can move in with Tyrone and Tina's, but...
Yeah, but then again, I suppose, if I was Tina, I couldn't live with Chesney and Katie being smug little 12-year-olds who think they know everything.
Well, Fizz could still just move in with Tyrone. Maybe she will.
Well, I don't... Maybe Tina thinks there's a bit too many people now.
Well, Tina and Tommy then go off to the police station, don't they, and say, we got some evidence. And
yeah.
The detective is interested, and he takes down everything they say. Did you think that he believed them?
Well, they go, we've got proof, Kirsty's lying. And then they say, well, he told us.
Yeah, they don't.
And then the policeman says, well, I'm going to tell the Crown Prosecution Service, who will decide it's nothing to do with me, really.
Yeah.
Tyrone's worried because he's only got supervised visitation for 1 hour a week. So he's sad about that, and... Fizz goes around there to see
Kirsty
and tells her to come clean while she's still got the chance. This is when Kirsty reveals that she scored 17 on the dash.
Yeah.
Because she knows the system and Tyrone is going down.
Because she's got really fast handwriting.
Yes.
No, I'm misremembering my dash quote. Yeah. Tests again.
Tina and Tommy tell Tyrone the police didn't believe them, and then Fizz says the most ridiculous comment I've heard.
What?
Get the Bobbins Award for this one. Why did I delete those photos from my phone? Yeah. And Tina says, because it upset you too much, remember?
Oh, that it's so stupid.
And everyone around the country went, oh, well, what an idiot.
Yeah. I was wondering whether they were going to, like, not mention the fact that Fizz had deleted them, and then maybe, like, next week that Fizz had gone, oh, I've still got them on my phone. Oh, well, there's the end of that storyline. Here you go, Kirsty gets locked up.
I really wish they had done something else, like, oh no, I've dropped my phone down the toilet and I didn't flush, or something. Rather than
Kirsty
delete
could
them.
Have got her hands on Fizz's phone, I'm sure.
They could have done so many things. Obviously, they were all in the writer's room and somebody suddenly went, oh my God, you know what we've forgotten? And they went, don't worry, just write it out. Yeah, but what can we say? Just say that she was too upset to look at him.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of old women that watch Coronation Street. They don't understand things like this anyway.
Like, just imagine Fizz like spends every evening on her phone sort of going through her photo album going, oh, picture of Hope, picture of Ruby, picture of Tony. Oh my God, Tyrone! Scroll through! I can't scroll through fast enough, just delete it.
But in any case...
What a spanner.
I mean, surely a tech guy would be able to take these phones, both of them, and recover the missing files.
No, well, the thing about...
Can't you do that?
The thing about that, though, is that you'd need the police to believe you that there was anything on there to start with.
They wouldn't have to believe you if they...
But they have to put... They have to put budget into it, though. It's like DNA tests and fingerprinting and stuff. They can't just snap their fingers. It's not like there's somebody there all the time that can do it. They've got to pay for it. And they've got to have a reason to pay for it.
Well...
If it's a choice between paying for a forensic computer guy to come along and look at someone's phone because somebody says that they got a picture on there of being beaten up, or go and look at somebody who's been accused of child pornography, or somebody else who's involved in a like multi-million pound drug ring, which one do you think they're going to spend the money on?
Well, you never know. Maybe that will turn out to be how...
Well, maybe, but...
How Kirsty's downfall begins.
I don't think that Tyrone and Fizz should hold their breath on that. They shouldn't have bloody deleted him to start with.
Mm.
What she should have done was got an iPhone and set it up to upload to the photo stream.
Yeah.
And then it would have been on her PC, but nobody has a computer in Coronation Street apart from
Ken. Faye and Ken.
Yeah, Faye and Ken fully on. Oh, they can't chat to each other on MSN Messenger anymore because they shut it down.
So the storyline ends, or the episode ends tonight with Tyrone snapping at Fizz when he discovers that she's gone round to talk with Kirsty, and so
I'll never see Ruby again.
Yeah.
So that's the end of that storyline, but can we just say that this is a fictional storyline, so when we're laughing about the dash test and everything, it's because we know it is not actually happening in real life. But it does happen in real life to people, and that's just terrible.
And if you've been affected by any of the issues in these episodes,
we don't take it lightly in real life, but as we have to keep reminding ourselves, this is fiction.
Yeah. So, can we talk now about a little bit about our reactions to how the storyline has gone?
Okay. I was disappointed with Monday's episode.
Because you thought there'd be something more dramatic.
Really, all that happened was that she shouted at him and stormed out. But then again, I was expecting it to come to a head and finish.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I think we both expected that this would be the ending point.
The climax.
Yeah, but as they sometimes do, they've decided to drag it out for a little bit longer. I was really hoping that this would be Tyrone's moment of triumph. Kirsty would be revealed as being the husband beater.
Yeah.
And that'd be the end of it. But no, they're dragging it out, and I think it is going on a bit too long now. As much as I love the storyline, I was ready for a bit of happiness for Tyrone, and now we've got to go through this in the police, and now it's going to go to trial, and it's going to be drag on and on.
What happened with Fizz already, and like being accused of something she didn't do, and
it's not uncommon for lots of characters to be falsely accused.
To be honest, it's boring.
I've enjoyed this week's episodes. I mean, I've been the Wednesday's episode, which was just that storyline, I really did like.
I actually like that too because it was only one set of notes.
Yeah, and everything that happened tonight, and like watching Kirsty's lies in the hospital, I was like, going, "Oh, Kirsty, you." But really, I'm ready for it to be drawn
come to a swift conclusion.
But now if it does come to a swift conclusion, I might end up thinking, why didn't they just end it at the wedding?
Yeah, I agree with you. I just hope it doesn't fall into the same pattern that has happened with Fizz. And it just seems like at the moment, somebody does something, somebody else doesn't like it, they all get accused of something they didn't do, everyone hates them, they have to cope with being a victim, and then it doesn't seem like they ever really get vindication at the end.
Mm.
Nobody ever went to Fizz, "Oh, sorry, Fizz, we think you're great now."
No, they didn't, did they? The storyline just kind of ended.
They just kind of went.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I don't know where it's going to go next now.
I want some kind of proper dramatic finale.
There's got to be, because I'm sure that she's going to be leaving Natalie Gamidi. I don't think she'll stay. There's going to be something big.
In my mind, I've got an image of Kirsty standing next to a precipice, holding Ruby in her arms and shrieking, and Tyrone and Fizz are there going, no, and she's going, "No, if you don't want me, you can't have Ruby, I'm going to jump," or
you're setting yourself
like
up for disappointment when she goes off in the back of a taxi.
No, something cool's going to happen. Something physical has got to happen, because it's all very well shouting at each other and throwing a bouquet in church, but that doesn't cut it as far as I'm concerned. I want...
Is she going to get a taste of her own medicine?
I want a cliff. I want I want sea breeze. I want thunder and lightning and pouring rain and a baby crying in the darkness and tear-streaked people watching in horror as a mother threatens to kill herself and her baby. All for Tyrone and Fizz to watch.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
It will. I do want to see more about Kirsty's mum and dad as well, though, before that all happens. I want Kirsty's mum. I know you're not interested, really.
I want Kirsty's mum to come and go, "You've turned out just like your father."
Yeah.
And then Kirsty to dissolve into jelly.
Suicide.
That's not how you commit suicide.
Turning yourself into jelly. Let's go on to a different storyline.
She did that though. She would score an extra point on the Nash test.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
There have been other storylines this week, such as...
Faye.
Are we talking about Faye? Go on then.
I don't know. She's just next on my list.
Oh, go on then. Let's talk about Faye.
She spunks off school because she's got to meet somebody at 1 o'clock, we discover, by spying on her laptop.
Yes.
And she tries to sneak out, but Anna catches her, but she manages to go out when Anna has to take the washing in.
Yeah. We're led to believe at this point that this is going to go down the route of the internet stalker kind of storyline.
Yeah,
that happened
with
Sarah Lou.
I didn't think that at all.
I didn't either because I knew that this was going to happen, but that's the way it was written, that we were supposed to think that that's who it was and that's who Anna and Owen thought it was too.
Well, you jumped in ahead because you've got Owen comes back and Anna discovers Faye snuck out, gone for a walk, be back for tea.
Yeah.
And then we see Faye meeting in the park a man who gives her a hug and buys her a hot chocolate.
Yeah.
And at this point, you're supposed to think, oh my God, a pedo. But I was thinking, that's his dad, isn't it? That's her dad, isn't it?
Yeah, even though he'd not been in it before, I think.
Well, I thought it was obvious, but yeah. I suppose I was just reading too much into it.
Yeah, meanwhile, Anna's been ringing around all of Faye's friends, and then they find her emails, and discover...
Oh, it says here, Anna is worried, she sees the laptop with the meeting arrangement, and it turns out Tim has a job on a building site. Maybe Owen can employ him later on, and they all become friends.
Yeah,
I reckon.
Could be one for the future.
Yeah, so they realise that she's meeting up with a man because obviously they don't employ school children on building sites, but they should do. Keep them out of trouble. And Owen says they should call the police right when Faye comes in, and Anna sort of shouts at her and she says, "I know what you've met somebody." And Faye says, "Yeah, we just talked and had a hot chocolate."
Yeah.
And they're like, "You can't see him anymore." And she says, "Well, he's my dad." What?
Yeah, cliffhanger.
I thought he was a stalker.
So on tonight's episode, Anna's lecturing Faye on Stranger Danger kinds of stuff, and Faye's saying, "Oh no, he's my dad. I'm his little lost princess. He's all right,
she's
really."
Lovely, isn't she? Poor girl, though. Let's see it from her point of view. She's had a horrible life. Although Anna came and rescued her, she still has felt left out from time to time, especially with Izzy and Gary.
Yeah, definitely.
Having
she's
all the pregnancy
really
stuff.
Been sidelined.
She's tried to involve herself, but everyone tells her she's not allowed to talk about it with anybody else, which means she can't really get excited about it.
Yeah, so she just wants to get some attention,
secret.
I think.
And then some man comes along and sort of lavishes her with attention. Of course she's going to love it, especially if he says, "You're my little princess," and gives her presents and stuff.
Chocolate.
Exactly. If somebody buys me hot chocolate, I'm theirs. Especially if it's got no calories in it. Well, Anna warns...
That's how I got you, isn't it?
Yeah. Anna warns Brian, the head teacher,
about this. Keep an eye on Faye, yeah.
Because Faye's refusing not to see him anymore. And they wonder, Anna and Owen wonder why he's appeared out of nowhere. And so Anna decides to call social services. And Joanne... Another social worker comes along and says that Tim Metcalf, who's the name of the father, has no legal rights over Faye, but they have to do a risk assessment. And Owen's not happy because he sort of expected them to say, "Right, restraining order, he's not allowed anywhere near
her." Yeah, we'll be right on it, sir.
Yeah. Anna's getting a bit jealous of Faye finding her biological parent because she feels left out because she knows she can never...
Yeah,
really...
I think she's thinking back to when she first got Faye, and Faye was very sort of... resistant to Anna, wasn't she? She didn't want to be there. She's like, "Anna, you're not my real mum."
Yeah.
And it took a long time for Faye to come round and accept Anna as her kind of the new mother figure in her life.
Owen's getting very annoyed because we know he doesn't really like things that don't go his way.
True.
And then they realise that Faye hasn't turned up for her netball practice that she was supposed to go to, that Anna was going to pick her up straight from, and Anna immediately realises it's because of Tim.
Yeah.
And then... They Faye texts them and says she's gone off to see her dad.
Yeah, later on, after the in the second half, Tim's phoned Anna and says, "It's all right, she's with me, I'll bring her back in half an hour." And Anna's kind of keep him on her
she's
side at
civil,
the moment.
Isn't she? She wasn't being nice, she was being civil.
Yeah.
But eventually they turn up an hour afterwards, and Owen and Anna are completely furious.
Tim seems like a pretty nice guy. Do you think that he's putting it on, or do you think he really is genuinely this reformed character that he's claiming to be? Because he seemed pretty nice to me.
I don't know.
Well, it's only the beginning of the storyline.
Well, Tim says he wasn't him that found Faye. Faye was looking for him, even though he had tried to find her in the past.
Yeah.
And he says Faye's mum was a smackhead. and that's why he didn't stay with her, and he should really have taken Faye with him, but he can't change the past now. And then Faye says, "Oh, look, I've got a Metcalf family heirloom." And Tim's going on about blah, blah, blah. When Faye was a baby, she stuck a dummy on her nose and rubbish. And Anna's just getting very irritated because she's got no little cute stories about when Faye was a baby.
Yeah, so she ends up kicking him out. She strongly suggests that he leaves after she takes sends Faye upstairs.
Yeah, Tim says you're going to regret this when Faye finds out. And then Faye sort of seems all right with it, really. She just goes, "Oh, I wanted to say goodbye." And Anna's like, "Just go upstairs now."
Yeah. So he leaves, and we see him later on just outside the corner shop. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, Owen jumps him.
Owen comes flailing out of nowhere, like, "Ah!"
Yeah, and we get to see what everybody knows is the true Owen, the evil Owen. Pins him up against the wall and is like, "If you come anywhere near Faye again, you'll be in trouble."
Yeah, and then Tim says, "Well, you're going to beat Faye up as well, are you?"
Yeah.
And then he actually runs off, which was quite hilarious.
Yeah. Do you think that Faye's going to tell Tim that Owen hit her that one time?
I did think when she said that.
That's what it made me
this
think
of it.
This
is where it's going then, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's going to be a custody battle then, isn't there?
Yeah.
And then Anna's going to have to choose between Owen and Faye or something.
I'll choose Faye.
Owen, for some reason, is going to hire Tim because he's a great builder.
Maybe they'll all live together in a little commune.
Maybe.
There's loads of room in that house.
Well, I mean, look how many Ireland can fit. Anna's really sad because Faye wants to change her name to Metcalf. And she thinks that she loves Tim more because it's just biology, really. And Owen's like, "Never."
Mm. I like this story. I like Faye. I don't like Owen. I know you don't like
don't
Faye,
like
but
Faye.
I do.
I love Owen.
Shut up. You don't like Owen. I hate Owen. Anna's all right. I'm interested in Faye. She's got me hooked.
I don't like Owen when he stirs things up with characters that I sympathise with. But when he's going around just beating random people up, I'm like, "Go on, Owen, punch him in the face." Go on, he's just trying to nick your kid off you.
Well, I'm sure that'll continue next week.
Of course it'll continue, but where's it going to go?
Well, I think it's not going to be long before Faye kind of is more interested in staying with Tim, and she's gonna accuse Owen.
Well, in that case, then, if that's going to happen and there's going to be a custody battle, blah, 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 we're going to find out that Tim is actually not all he appears to be, and he's actually a smackhead as well.
You reckon?
Yeah. Otherwise, the only solution to this is that he goes off, Faye and Tim go off together, and then Faye leaves the programme.
That's not going to happen.
Is Tim going to move into the street? That's what you've got to ask yourself.
Well, he could. There's always plenty of flats spare, isn't there? So he could, and he could try and coax Faye away and maybe invite her around for tea. And
maybe he can work with Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Because we forgot there are actually two building firms on the street now.
Yeah, that could actually.
He could build a rival firm that would get right up Owen's nose.
That'd be good. I'd like that.
Should we write in?
Yeah, let's tell him. Right, let's talk about Gail and Lewis and the olives.
Wow, yeah. What a palaver.
Yeah, so Nick's looking very stressed and pained and wrinkly at the beginning of the week. So Gail says, "I'll help you with your order on the computer."
I know. For some reason, she thinks helping him is transferring a piece of paper onto a computer screen.
Yeah, it solves all of his
Why
problems.
Why didn't he just go, "Oh, I'll just do it myself"?
Yeah, it's only
literally
going to
take me 3 seconds to write this.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't let her help at the beginning, does he? But she keeps pestering him, as only Gail can. And he's like, "Fine, type it up then, just make sure you get it right." And so she
types it out, like, probably
5 jars of olives.
I can just imagine her sitting there going, tap, tap,
one finger at a time.
Tap, yes. And so Lewis goes, oh, I'll help you check it.
Oh, I spilled my coffee.
Oh, no, you better go and tidy it up. Oh,
I'm so sorry, Gail.
And then he changes it from 5 jars of olives to 500.
Yeah.
And then he says to Gail, that looks perfectly fine to me. And Gail goes, no need to check it again.
Yeah.
I'll just send.
It wasn't exactly a long email, and like buried in the midst of this reams of text, he changed 5 to 500. It was pretty obvious.
The thing is, it was exactly, they've obviously, on the computer screen, they put it right where your eye hits naturally, so that the viewers at home automatically look at that bit when Lewis is changing it. So when Gail comes along, she obviously just had like blinkers on or something, because she didn't look at it at all.
Yeah.
She's like, no, if I look at it, it would mean I don't trust Lewis.
I liked it when the 500 jars of olives did arrive, and Gail's like, I'm sure I didn't put 500, as if you could possibly make that mistake. Oops, I accidentally put 500 instead of 5. The zeros right next to that 5 key.
Yeah, well, she's stupid.
We missed out the scene back at number 8 where Gail is hilariously trying to seduce Lewis again.
He says, yeah, she's like, I've got lunch free.
Also, the bed is free, the house is free. Let's do it. She's feeling a bit horny.
And Lewis says, I don't want stolen time with you. I want you to be special and romantic. And she says, when will it be? And he says,
soon. Yeah, there's passion beating inside of me.
Oh.
But we've got to go and have a nice meal first.
Yes.
So,
it's not a proper date if you don't have food.
They then go back to the bistro, and the olives arrives, and Nick walks in, and he's like, oh, mother, what have you done now? So after the break, Gail apologises, and Nick's like, look, just forget it, you just go home.
Really? That was the kindest thing you could possibly have said to her? He could have said, how did you even manage to screw something up so completely, just get out of my sight, you stupid woman. But instead he just said, go away, just go away, please.
Later on we see Lewis coming home, Lewis goes home and he says he's at the dentist appointment, doesn't he? And he makes her lunch, because this has all happened before lunchtime. And he suggests that she get away from the kids, because that Nick's just a nasty piece of work. All this time he's been turning Gail against her.
He just keeps going, they just take, and you give, and they don't appreciate you. And
I think he's done quite a good job of sort of drip-feeding things into her and Nick and David to try and turn them against each other, because they could have just had it there within one episode, they hate each other, and then she makes a decision. True, but this is dragged on in a good way, and it's like, yeah, actually...
I don't think you call it dragging on if it's gone in a good way.
It's the long game, isn't it?
Yeah. So he's saying to her, let's go off to Tuscany.
Yeah, she's thrilled for that. She likes the idea of moving to Italy, being near Sarah Lou and Bethany.
Live your own life. Stop running around after your kids. I'm falling in love with you. I can't be with you when Audrey's in the background. No, just ignore me. I'm being selfish.
He'd obviously, this is the moment when I'm going to tell her I love her, and that'll be the clincher.
Yeah, exactly.
So he goes back to the bistro. And then we didn't see them at all on Wednesday because of the Tyrone episode that was. Today, the olives are still causing Gail stress. And she's like saying, oh, I wish this had never happened, but Lewis reminds her of his offer about the hotel.
And he also says that Nick should apologise for being rude. For some reason, Nick does.
Yeah, he apologises for snapping at her, but he says...
But he says the magic word, but...
You're better off cleaning,
I'm really sorry, but...
Yeah.
Just stick to cleaning in the future. And Gail doesn't really go much on that.
No, so she quits.
And he says, fine. See you later.
Back at home, Gail's still moping around, and then when Lewis comes and talks about the hotel again, she accepts his offer, and we later see him supposedly on the phone to Patrick, telling Lewis that unfortunately the apartment that came with the hotel is no longer on offer. He's going to have to buy one there, but with what money?
He doesn't have any money, Michael. He's broke. He's got to pay Audrey back.
Oh, yeah. But Gail does. Well, she's got some
Gail's got a house.
She's got a house. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
So we see Gail on the phone to Jet Wonga, that reputable company.
She's trying to get a loan against their mortgage.
Yeah, I don't really understand things like that. Yeah. And he says, oh, no, you can't do it for me. I don't want you dipping into your nest
egg. I won't hear of it.
So he says, don't worry, that it was just a dream. Weatherfield has its charms, mainly you.
That's them kissing.
Yeah. So they leave it there. So that's obviously going to go further next week when she falls deeper and deeper into his trap. I have seen them on the front of the TV guides next week, so I do know that that's going to be in it at least.
When they say Jet Wonga, that's like that. There's another company, isn't there, with these grannies in it?
Yeah,
it's just imagine those evil grannies plotting to steal Gail's house.
Yeah, you've got to be British to understand that reference.
Does that mean that in a few months' time there'll be a bunch of old puppeteer grannies living in Gail's house and she'll be living with Eileen?
Maybe. Sophie and Jenna this week. There was a little bit on Monday
there was one thing.
Yeah, Sally tells Mandy to keep Jenna away from Sophie.
Keep away from Thorfinn.
Mandy says, Sophie's the one who needs stopping.
I tell you what, if the characters on the street didn't have their mums in it, there would be half as much drama.
Yeah, it is. Mums,
it's mostly mums just going on at other mums. Hey, here, your kid's a lesbian. Well, she's yours. No, she's not. Your kid's a liar. No, your kid's a molester.
Yeah. So today that storyline stepped up a little bit. Sally's still sniping away at Jenna and Mandy.
Sally is such a royal bitch.
I know.
She's just... I think I'd kill her. She was in Roy's roles and Roy's all got his back pain and Jenna's talking to him about it and Sally's just there going, she doesn't know anything about it. She's going to lose her job. She's an ex... Well, I didn't write down anything she said because she annoyed me.
Yeah, well, Sophie doesn't like it, does she? Sophie's like, Mum, Jenna still is. She's still a good doctor or whatever.
Mandy tells her to shut up, and Sophie drags her out.
I do like Mandy.
Sally's telling Sophie that Jenna's concern was just a PR move, and that Jenna should definitely lose her job for preying on vulnerable girls. And she said, you really need to look more for the bad in people, which really should be Sally's motto. It's like a cross stitch onto every cushion in her house.
Yeah.
So Sophie...
Unless they're a rich businessman, in which case, sleep with them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sophie tells Jenna later that she's going to protect her job by telling everybody that she was the one who made the pass.
Which she was.
Which we were both baffled by, because inexplicably Jenna tries to talk her out of it, and Sophie's like, no, no, I care about you.
Yeah, I don't know why straight away Sophie didn't say, well, I'll save your job and I'll say it.
It seems bloody obvious to me, because it was her all along.
Yeah, now Lloyd gets himself involved at this point, because he sees all this going on, and he's still convinced that Jenna actually is a lesbian.
At this point, though... That doesn't make any difference to any of this, really. The storyline should be that Jenna needs to get her job back and they should just shut up about the lesbian stuff and concentrate on that. I know it's not as much interesting drama, but in real life, it doesn't really matter if she's a lesbian or not. It's really annoying.
Yeah.
Because everyone seems to be losing sight of the fact that Jenna's losing her job because Sophie kissed her, basically.
Yeah.
And Kevin found her and made a complaint.
Yeah.
Not because they're lesbians.
No, that's the bit of the wrong issue.
And they're just
really
just stuck on this, whether she's a lesbian thing.
Well, at the end of the episode, Jenna admits to Lloyd that things could have gone further if there wasn't this professional relationship that she shouldn't have breached.
Yeah, so exactly. Lloyd says it's none of my business, really. But I thought it was creepy because Lloyd and Jenna are there on the sofa, and Jenna's hugs up to him and he's stroking her hair. They've only known each other for about 3 months.
If you didn't watch the programme and you switched it on, you would have assumed they were a couple, the way that they were acting around each other.
I'm sorry, but if I had met my dad now, as adult to adult, I don't think I could quite fall so easily into the, oh, I'm daddy's girl, stroke my head, please.
Mm.
It's creepy.
Yeah. So that's about it that's happened there. And then...
Jenna says, I can't admit to Sophie I fancy her, basically, because everything will fall apart.
Oh,
that's her dilemma at the moment. She's stuck between love and her career.
Yes.
I think.
Da, da, da.
She didn't come out and say that, but that's what I interpret her
pained
expressions to mean.
Yeah. And as what we've all been waiting for, Rob and Tracy.
No, Racy.
Oh, Racy storyline. They get into a taxi together. They refuse to get out because they both booked a taxi.
No, because they're both horrible bitches.
Yeah, and Tracy tricks Rob into staying in the taxi by leaving her phone there, and she goes off shopping. Oh no, she leaves her wallet, doesn't her purse. But anyway, it's not very interesting, and it ends up with Rob liking Tracy's spunk.
Basically, Rob and Tracy like each other because they're both horrible, manipulative people, and they see a challenge in one another, and their each other's bad behaviour amuses them.
Yes.
Rob thinks it's funny that Tracy's manipulative and made them wait because she wanted her purse back, but she turns out she's got an emergency credit card, although how she funds this, I do not know, because she doesn't have a job.
Huh.
And then he thinks he's great, I don't know why.
No.
He's got business. And he thinks she's great because he, after all that, she demands he buys her a drink.
It just is another Charlie Stubbs. If it ends up with Rob getting whacked over the head by a statue, I'm all for it.
Yeah, brilliant. Right. Is it buy one, get one free?
Let's not do street talk anymore, because it's been over an hour. Okay, so our character profile this week is Julie Karp. She's been a very good maid of honour, so we thought we'd have a look over a couple of years in the street so far. She's played by Katie Kavanagh. Julie was born in 1977. She's half-sister to Eileen Grimshaw, and she first appeared on the 25th of April 2008. Since then, she's been in just over 450 episodes. So we've got a bit of backstory about Julie first, which didn't appear until a couple of years into her stint in the show. Eileen's friends, when she was little, Paula Karp, who was at the time a flirty 14-year-old, seduces and sleeps with Eileen's 37-year-old father, Colin. And this was covered up from Eileen for many years, but unbeknownst to Colin, Paula was pregnant with Julie. Cut to 2008, Julie appears in the Rovers waiting for her boyfriend and saying about how wonderful he is and he's this fantastic guy. And we're all like, who are you? Who's this boyfriend you're talking about? And then Kurt walks in and he's like, oh, hello, you made it then. So this is the first sort of storyline with Julie, was that she was girlfriend to Kirk. I didn't think they were very well suited to each other at all at the time, and I was like, no, get away, who's this new character? But since
she
then,
was balmy, wasn't she?
She's utterly balm pot. Yeah, well, she still is, but we've kind of grown to love her. Also in 2008, there'd been frequent clashes between Julie and Fizz, sort of reminiscent of now.
Yeah, she was jealous, wasn't she? Because she thought Fizz wanted to take Kirk back.
Yeah, but eventually, kind of that mellowed out, and she moved in with Fizz and Chesney and all that lot there.
Gets a job at the factory like everyone.
Yeah, if you're a woman in Coronation Street, you get a job at the factory.
If you're a man, you own a business.
Yeah.
Sexism!
She was also involved that year in pushing Fizz to reconcile with John Stape because she thought that he was a nice man.
I'll tell you one thing about Julie, and you can't convince me otherwise, she is an excellent judge of character.
So, the next year, by this time Julie was supervisor at the factory, and Tony asks asks her to sack one of her colleagues, but she couldn't bring herself to do it, so we get to kind of see the nice caring side of Julie again that we're all used to, and she said, no, it's all right, I'll go. But then Luke Strong, remember him, he'd taken over Carla's share of the factory at the time, kind of saved her from self-sacking, or whatever you'd call it, redundancy.
Self-sacking.
So by later on in that year, she's beginning to tire of Kirk, because he's a...
He's Kirk,
exactly. Yeah. There was a bit of a pregnancy scare. Well, it was a scare for her, because she didn't want a baby from Kirk. He did, and he was gutted to find out that, in the end, it was negative.
Which is sad, really, because poor Julia, I bet she would give anything to even have Kirk's baby now.
I know. She's there, kind of... wanting to split up with Kirk but not wanting to hurt his feelings, and I remember her utter shock when he out of the blue comes up and says, oh, I think we should break it up, we've obviously been drifting apart.
Which is kind of quite wise sometimes,
occasionally.
Yeah. So she becomes interested in Jason, even though neither of them know they're actually related, and for some reason they sleep together.
Yeah, they have a night of passion. The truth about Eileen and Julie being half sisters comes to light not long after that, when Paula Karp, this old friend of Eileen, comes into the program and discovers that Jason and Julie were seeing each other. I can't remember whether they slept together or not, to be honest. I think maybe they didn't, but I might be wrong. Maybe someone can tell me with that. Not long after that, Colin Grimshaw, who had also come into the programme just for this little storyline, and had been courting Rita for a bit, died of a stroke. He didn't die straight away. He had a stroke, and by this time, everyone sort of had totally shunned Colin because of him sort of abusing Paula
with a 14-year-old child.
Yeah, but Julie's there, like saying, "Oh, it's my dad. I've never known him. I want to get to know him. Whatever he's done." So she visits him in hospital and everything, but. He later dies of a second stroke, so that's the end of that.
Julie's like a moth to a flame, isn't she?
Whenever like there is, with drama and tragedy,
yeah, she's there, burning her wings.
Yeah.
2010, she starts to work with Eileen's boyfriend, who was a child entertainer, who's called Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
He's quite a famous actor, I think. Sort of like a character actor, isn't he?
Yeah, I was looking at Jesse on Corypedia last night, and it said that he was a comedian that came into it.
In other soaps?
I don't remember. He might have been.
Anyway,
he was a cowboy, wasn't he? That was his act.
And she was his, not politically correct at all, sidekick, Higher Lower.
Yeah, I think Eileen...
Indian squaw.
There was another Higher Lower, and then Eileen had to take over, and then Julie did, when Eileen couldn't or wouldn't do it, and it turned out that Julie was actually pretty good at doing
it. She was very good at it, and Eileen got jealous.
Yeah, I can totally imagine Julie sort of loving children.
I can remember her doing it.
Yeah.
They have to carry on doing it together in secret because of Eileen's jealousy.
Yeah, she thinks that Jesse fancies Julie.
But it turns out she was correct because he makes a pass at Julie and then the pair of them chase him off the street.
Yeah, and I was glad to see the back of him because apart from a couple of funny scenes with his parrot, he was a totally dull character.
In October, she meets and starts dating the fabulous Brian Packham.
Yeah, but at this time, this is when the whole Colin Fishwick saga was going on. So John was trying to... had told Brian that he was actually Colin Fishwick, and he didn't like the fact that Brian was spending more time around the street, so he tried to split Julie and Brian up by
he was still married.
Yeah, he tells Brian's wife, and she comes into the restaurant or the bistro or wherever they were, and then sort of Julie's like, oh, you're still married, and storms off.
Poor Julie.
Yep.
In 2011, she bumps into Brian again, and she still has feelings for him. And Fizz tells her that she and John split them up on purpose, and they end up reuniting.
Yeah. And also that year, she discovered that she and Eileen are related to Dennis Tanner. He'd just come back into the programme at that point, because Colin Grimshaw's father was Elsie Tanner's father. So a little bit of a tenuous link there.
Colin Grimshaw's father was Elsie Tanner's father?
Oh, no, cousin. Colin Grimshaw's father was Elsie Tanner's cousin. So there's a bit of a link
there. Why?
Well, they just wanted to make it a link to that to Elsie on the past. It was just a bit of nostalgia, I think. I don't mind it really. It was one of these silly coincidences. So
well, why don't they just make everyone related then?
They almost are, aren't they? In 2012, Julie thinks that she's pregnant with Brian's baby, and he's quite out of character.
So sad.
Accuses her of having an affair.
Well, he's got good reason for that. He's had a vasectomy.
Yeah, but it turns out that actually, if you have a vasectomy, it's not 100% accurate. So they're like, oh, okay, you are pregnant and it's mine. But alas, Julie has a growth on her ovaries, which she has removed, and she'll never be
a
mum.
And this is a foster mum.
It is, because out of all the women on the street, she's the one. Well, actually, I can think of two women that make really good mums.
Who?
Julie and Hayley.
Aww.
But none of them could be.
No. Oh, I really want Julie to have a baby. I can just imagine her, how excited she'd be with her nursery, picking out colours, going, oh, Brian, we better get yellow in case it's a boy or a girl.
She'd be a really...
I don't want to know until it's born.
She'd be a really full-on mum. She'd be reading
brilliant.
Up all about it. I think she'd be worried about any time that it just looked like it was going
to
be.
I want Julie to be my mum.
Yeah, don't I'll tell
it's
your mum
too
that.
Late. Too late, I've been born.
So, Julie is a fantastic character. She's only been in it a few years, but I hope she's in it for years to come. I can see her and Brian as... I'd like to see them as a long-lasting Corrie couple.
I don't care about Brian.
I think Brian's hilarious. They're like...
I don't like him because he's... Every time he talks about schools,
yeah,
it annoys me.
I don't mind school stuff on Corrie.
No.
However wrong they are and however little idea they've got about what school's actually like.
Don't get me started. This could go on for another hour.
I think that Julie and Brian could be like Stan and Hilda. They've definitely both got shades of them, I think.
I think Julie is two times the amount of personality that Brian's got.
But, really?
Yeah.
It's only because they don't give Brian a chance to be in it. He's never in it.
Yeah, that doesn't make any difference. He's still nowhere near as interesting. It doesn't make a difference whether it's because he's... I mean, they're not real people, Michael. They're only going to be in it.
They need to give him a chance. Some of the lines that he has, like his petrol stuff this week, is great. I thought that when they moved into Coronation Street, when they moved into the flat...
We haven't even seen their house.
No, we've got no idea where that. We know that they live there. It's totally pointless, them moving in.
I want to see them decorating their house.
Yeah. If you're going to say you don't like Brian, let's at least hopefully give them the chance to have a proper storyline, and then we'll see.
I agree. I do agree with you that I don't like him because he's not in it enough. I don't dislike him. I take it back. I don't dislike him. I never meant that. I just don't care.
He's not in it enough.
Yeah.
He's funny. I like him as a comic relief character.
But I don't like it when they make him out to be a bumbling fool and use
aren't
that
all teachers
to make,
stupid?
Make that stupid comments about teachers because I'd... makes me so mad.
So, Katie Kavanagh has said about Julie, there's three words to describe her: sparkly, romantic, and sagacious. I don't know what that means.
Wise?
Maybe. I don't think anything irritates me about Julie. I couldn't play her if anything irritated me. She does talk a lot sometimes. I'm completely knackered by the end of the day of playing her, and I just want to go home and moan for an hour. My favourite quality about Julie is her sense of kind of fun and an irrepressible kind of joy, and I love playing that. I think that sums up Julie really well. She is.
I wonder how much she's like Julie in real life.
I can imagine her being absolutely the same, but I'm sure she's not.
The thing I like about Julie, as apart from her personality, is I like her style.
Yeah, she's always.
I love her little retro clothes that she wears and her vintagey look.
Yeah, if her and Brian do get married, and I'm sure they will.
I will just have kittens. Oh, can't wait to see what her wedding dress would look like.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah. So Gemma has looked up sagacious on Google.
Having or showing keen mental discernment and good judgment. What rubbish!
Good judgment?
No, sorry, Katie, you're wrong. That's the charm of Julie.
Yeah.
She throws herself headlong into things she's got no idea about.
Yeah.
That's why we like her.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Kirsty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, good on Julie, good character. Let's...
Keep it up
the good work.
Let's see actually where she lives, please.
Yes, please, more Julie storylines. Away from the factory, let's see them properly develop them. That's what I want. And that's about it. So, a bit of a short character profile, let's go to the cabin. Okay, there's been hardly any news that we found this week, but the big one, of course, is Corrie's triumph at the National Television Awards. Yeah, I voted.
I voted.
Yeah, so we hope all you voted as well.
I didn't vote, I forgot. I'm sorry, I can't lie to you.
What?
I'm really sorry, I totally forgot, but it's okay, because...
But they still won the awards. Well, Natalie Gamidi didn't win Best Newcomer.
I wasn't going to vote for her anyway.
Shut up, you were. Alan Hulsell won Best Serial Drama Performance. I'm glad he won, but I would hardly say he's the best actor. He's one of my favourite characters.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But I wouldn't say he's the best actor.
Yeah, but he was the only one nominated.
Yeah, from Corrie. No, he wasn't. Keegan was.
That's true.
But he should have definitely won over her, because I don't really like her.
They both have very similar styles of acting.
Yeah. Michelle wins all the awards anyway. And let her win the sexiest one, and Tyrone can win the acting one. He could win the hairiest actor.
Now, really, considering the state of soaps in this country, that should be a category.
The hairiest serial drama performance. he made quite a moving tribute to Bill Tarmy, Jack Duckworth, after the award ceremony. He says he'd probably be laughing his head off at the fact that he's won this award. Bill used to say to me, "None of that bloody acting, you." For me, to pick up an award for acting, he'd be laughing his head off. But his wife, when he passed away, gave me his watch, which I'm wearing tonight, so he's with me, really. And I think...
A bit morbid.
Well, Bill had such an influence on his acting.
He obviously really did, didn't he? Because any quote we've got, is he's mentioning...
Yeah. Jack was like a surrogate father to Tyrone, and Bill was...
That's really sweet.
...his mentor, yeah.
Because he was in it when he was a teenager, wasn't he?
Yeah. So as he was growing up, this was the guy that he sort of aspired to be, I guess. And also when Corrie won the Best Soap Award, Phil Collinson dedicated the award to Bill as well. So he's obviously still in the forefront of everyone's minds. Mm-hmm. So yeah, well done. But bad luck to Natalie Gamidi, who didn't win that.
She should
Best
really
Newcomer.
Have got that.
She absolutely should. Well, the British Soap Awards are coming up later in the year.
Do.
Hopefully, she'll win something then. Although she won Best Newcomer last year.
We can't say, can we? Because we don't know anything about the competition.
We just know it is obviously worse. So that's it for news, really. But we will do our competition now. Last week, we gave our first copy of The Great Northern Cookbook by ex-Corrie actor Sean Wilson to regular podcast contributor Tivor. And we didn't give it to her because she's regular. It was randomly picked.
I saw it myself.
Yeah. And this week, we're going to give away our final three copies. We had a Twitter competition, and we said to enter, you just had to follow us and retweet us. So we got six entries, which is two more than last week. I don't think people really want this book, but, well, it doesn't matter. I'm sure the people who entered are quite excited to find out if they've won, because they know that they've got quite a good chance, 50-50 chance this week.
So how do I do this, then?
Right, so I've loaded up a random number generator. I've set it all up. All you have to do is press get numbers. It's like pressing the button on the lottery.
Well, first of all, do we not need to read out what the order is so that they know we're not cheating?
Oh, yeah.
Right, one, Reagan Gunningham. Two, Sarah Hammond. Three, Dawn. Four, Stephen Feldman. Five, Karen Kay. And six, Deez Meez.
Okay, so our first winner is...
Five.
Five, which is...
Karen Kay.
Woo, well done, Karen Kay. Next one.
Are we going to remember this?
Yeah, we're going to remember this.
So do it again?
Yeah.
Again.
It's number one.
We should professional.
Reagan Gunningham. Yeah, you entered last week. You got it.
Again.
One again. You don't win two copies.
No.
Four.
Was.
Stephen Feldman. Yay.
So those are our three winners, and we'll be in touch with you to get your prizes to you.
Yeah, or you can get in touch with us first. We'll see. We'll get them to you. So let's go on to the feedback section now. Okay, so feedback. We've had quite a bit this week. It's been quite nice. Last week, we asked about your podcast listening habits and where you listen to Conversation Street. And D. Logan said, since you asked, I usually listen to podcasts when I'm washing the dishes or cooking supper.
That's quite... We do that.
I do it when I'm washing the dishes. And you do it when you're cooking supper.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bit of a combination
of
both.
We're very forward-thinking in this household.
Yeah. So, we'd like to know when other people listen to us. And yeah, Claire Flynn, who was the person last week who said she listened to us at work, got back to us again saying that it was a thrill to hear us read out her Facebook post on the podcast.
You will get used to it, Claire, if you listen to us for any length of time.
Yeah, because we do seem to get the feedback from the same people over again. It's gradually building up. So we were also made quite a good guess about what we did for a living.
I think you'll find she says pretty good guess as to what I do for a living, Gemma.
Yeah, you suggested she was a heart surgeon and she listened to the podcast while she was operating.
Turns out that she is. The end.
No, she's not. Close, though. She works in a hospital.
Yeah, that's right. Heart surgeon.
Works in the records department. So listen to the computer while listening to the podcast.
She works at her computer and listens to the podcast.
I wish I could listen to the podcast and work at the same time. Children, go away. Okay. I'm listening.
I listen to my podcast when I'm working on the computer, but I don't get much done.
We also had a Facebook post this week from Rob Innes, who says, so, I'm doing it. I'm watching without spoilers. If you remember back from a few weeks ago, he said he was going to try and have that as a New Year's resolution for himself. I'm so pleased I am. Tonight's episode, that was Friday's, was amazing. I was on the edge of my seat. I had no idea she was going to find the phone and no idea Fizz was going to get invited. Here's to no spoilers. I can't wait till Monday to actually find out what happens because I have no idea. That's really good that you're going spoiler
free.
That's
cool. It's very good that you've kept up your resolutions.
Yeah, unlike most everyone else who says they're going to lose weight or whatever and they stick to them. They don't stick to them. I'd be interested to know how many people that listen to us are also spoiler free. Because, I mean...
Yeah, you listening to us going, obviously everyone knows Kirsty is going to go mad and become a copper again and get Tyrone...
Yeah. It'd be interesting to know. I mean, doing research for news and things, I end up having to see some spoilers anyway. I mean, you don't, do you?
Yeah, you stop trying to make out you're hard done by, because when we go to the supermarket, the first thing you look at is the soap magazine.
I don't
magazine.
Mean to.
You look, it's like, oh no, I've seen a spoiler. I don't even look at the soap magazines. I'm going, oh, look at that, Cosmopolitan.
We had a tweet from Katie Mack this week saying, don't understand how Natalie didn't win her best newcomer. She was robbed, but at least she won top last 2012.
Let's be honest, she would prefer, of the two, if she had the choice, she would pick top last 2012.
Well, the Conversation Street Podcast Awards are the most prestigious.
They're prestigious.
Entertainment awards.
Yeah, and on the also, world. They're not voted for by the public, because obviously the public doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
They are voted for by experts about Coronation Street, such as me and Michael.
And no one else.
Exactly.
We had a couple of wedding predictions in last weekend as well. Leslie said, "I think the wedding will go ahead, but what happens after is going to be scary."
Ooh.
So kind of true. Well, the wedding didn't fully go ahead, but what came after was scary.
Yes.
Robin said...
Time Lord Robin
Bazza said, "I think the wedding will go ahead and then Tyrone will get arrested for assault, etc."
Well done.
Are you sure you're spoiler-free, Time Lord Robin Bazza?
No, liars.
And Rob had said, "Kirsty will kill the vicar," which is the best prediction ever.
Rob is certainly spoiler-free.
He did nearly get knocked out by Fizz in the church door, so half a mark for that one, Rob.
If she had thrown that bouquet a bit harder, she might have clocked him on the head.
Yeah. After the wedding, Tora Johnson said, because I'd said I quite liked the episode, but Gemma was underwhelmed.
No, I thought it was rubbish.
Tora said, "I'm with Gemma. I thought it'd be explosive with all the build-up and Kirsty's great acting, but it really just sort of fizzled. It was like, ho-hum, another affair outed, yawn."
Yep. Robin has said, "I thought something bigger was going to happen than what I actually did, but maybe it's going to be the focus of the rest of the week for a climax on Friday. Kirsty didn't hit the vicar. I am very disappointed." So are we all. She's also the first person I've heard this year use the phrase, "not by a long chalk." So if Natalie Gamini doesn't win anything at the NTAs, at least she has that to comfort her.
And our podcast award.
Yes.
We also had a very long email from TVOR, like usual, which is always good to get. We can't read out the whole thing, but I just want to talk a bit about the fact that she was over in Manchester last week with some of the guys from the Coronation Street blog, and you might
other bloggers.
Other bloggers there, and they were very, very lucky, and I'm insanely jealous that they got to walk around the sets inside and outside.
And
I was at school, girl. She said she was thrilled to be the winner of the cookbook.
You can tell us, you can admit this, that you were more excited about the cookbook. Because really, studio tour, cookbook, what?
She told us a bit about the tour.
Pictures.
Shut up. She said, shut up. She says, "One of the things we were told during the studio visit I was just on with Coronation Street bloggers, whenever there's a new producer, some cast take the opportunity to leave, not renew their contracts. And that's what exactly happened with Julie Hesmondhag. Contracts are renewed in September, so they figure there'll be a few more leaving in due course." Well, we'll see about that, see whether Stuart Blackburn drives anyone else out or whether anyone takes the opportunity. Your contract's only ever a year or two, isn't it?
Do you think that they sort of like go so that their friends don't get sacked?
I don't know.
See, they're all like, you go, you've got a job doing something
maybe
else.
It's like at the factory, and if everyone gets sacked, they all say, "Oh, we're going on strike.
I'm walking out."
Yeah. Another interesting thing, after a location has been on fire, when they rebuild or redecorate, they always put something orange in.
That's weird.
Yeah. "I started to think about places. Barlow's Bookies is orange on the window framing and sign. The factory has an orange staircase inside. Allahan's has orange in the tiles," and that was after Mad Meyer burned it. "I don't know if number 13 has orange. It didn't seem to when Lloyd and Cheryl decorated it. But now Kevin has it, we haven't seen the inside." After all that rigmarole with the decorating last year as well. "The only other place that's had a fire is number 4, from when the Peacocks had it. I don't know if that had any orange, or if it does now, but perhaps they didn't start that trend back then."
What do you mean, the only other place that's had a fire is number 4? It sounds like everywhere has been on fire.
That's what I was surprised when you said that. What about the Rovers? That was on fire, but I'm sure they didn't have a trend back then.
What about the street? That was on fire. They should just stick an orange cone out there.
Bistro was on fire and the tram crashed into it.
Hasn't it got an orange sign?
Yeah.
Maybe they've got oranges on the bar.
Yeah, and Tibor
really
talked about some of the people that she saw on the tour. They saw Sue Nichols, who's Audrey, drove past and waved, and then they saw her walk across in front of them. She's not as tall as she looked, and very thin. We also saw...
I bet you they're all skinnier than they are in real life.
Oh, yeah, I bet. They also saw Tony Hursty, who plays Paul, and Shobhna Gulati, who said hello. She's not that tall, and she's slender as well. Someone else said...
I have to say, whoever is picking her outfits recently should be shot then.
Yeah.
Because they're not doing her any justice. Mm.
She also saw Helen Worth, Jack P. Shepherd, Ben Price. Loads of people. And she is very privileged to have been lucky to see the inside sets twice now. The other time was in 2006 with a friend who got invited.
It says here they got given a lolly.
They did. They got a lolly from the cabin.
Whoa.
You can see all of her pictures on a Flickr account, which is flickr.com/photos/TVOR.
Cool.
Yeah.
I've seen them.
They're
good. They're good, aren't they?
Yeah. So
it's
so
really
do have
weird. It's actually very weird seeing
the inside of them. Yeah, it is. Yeah. So that is it for this week. what a long episode. It's been a very...
It's all Kirsty's fault.
It's been a big week for Corrie. And whether or not you were disappointed by the episode, it's certainly been a big talking point.
I was... Okay, yeah, I was disappointed in Monday's episode, but it's progressed quite in an interesting way that I didn't see coming, so...
Yeah.
There's that.
So, let us know what you've thought about the episodes this week, or about anything, or if you've got anything that you want us to talk about, you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com, visit our blog, conversationstreet.podbean.com, find us on iTunes, find us on Twitter, at conversationstreet. And of course, you can like us on Facebook and get joined in on all the lovely chats that we have on there. That is it for this week. Any final words, Gemma?
Bye!
Classic. The music from this episode is from podcastthemes.com.